I'm Ava Hertley. Welcome back to the Brand is Female podcast.
This week, my guest is Tiffany Callender, a community developer and social entrepreneur whose work has profoundly impacted Montreal's Black community over her 16-year career as the youngest female executive director of one of Quebec's oldest Black organizations. Tiffany was named among the 100 most influential people of African descent under 40 in 2020. In 2021, she spearheaded the creation of the Federation of African Canadian Economics, known as FACE, for which she is CEO, where she set up the $160 million Black Entrepreneurship Loan Fund in collaboration with Canada's federal government. In this episode, we discuss FACE's impact on the Black entrepreneurial community 3 years later. This season of our podcast is brought to you by TD Bank Group Women in Enterprise. TD helps women in business achieve success and growth through its program of educational workshops, financing, and mentorship. Visit thebrandisfemale.com/podcast and follow the link to find out how TD can help you. Tiffany, welcome back to The Brand is Female. I'm so happy we get to do this again.
I know. It feels like a long time ago, but not really. So I'm really glad to be back with you.
And I think the last conversation happened while we were still in the thick of the pandemic, which was just around the time that FACE Coalition was born, if I remember correctly. So I'm really looking forward to kind of taking a look at what's happened over the past 3 years and, you know, what you've seen and observed in terms of changes, wins, you know, new challenges in the ecosystem. So I'm really happy we get to chat today.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. And although it's short because we're coming up on our 3rd year anniversary in May, this spring, it still feels very long and full, and that we've been able to learn so much. But I think that's when you have an intentional journey. That's when you really get to absorb and see and innovate.
Well, for those of our listeners who missed the first conversation with you, would you walk us a little bit through the story behind the creation of FACE and also how your own background led you on that path and put you in the position to be able to get such an amazing project off the ground?
Yeah, for sure. So I'll start with how I got here and then how this initiative, which we call lovingly called FACE, began. So I am what I identify as a true Montrealer. I'm born, raised, and stayed in this city. My parents.
As a side note.
This is it. Like, I've never cheated on the city. Like, I've stayed. And my parents moved here in the late 70s from the beautiful island of Barbados. Mm-hmm. And that was in the late 70s. So I grew up in the time of the actual change around the Loi 101. So I am what you call truly a, you know, a Bill 101 kid who grew up by hook or crook, you know, becoming bilingual, my parents being English immigrants. This was probably the biggest challenge of their young couple life, parenting life. But I think better for it, because I was able to grow up with the true sense of what it is to be Canadian, which is to be bilingual. But through that journey, I also saw that there was a lot of challenges in my community. And my community I identify with is the Black community, which is my closest community, but also the English-speaking community. And I saw the challenges of the times that I was born into, that we had members who had difficulty adjusting to the new working language of the province and had difficulty with employment and even navigating the system. And I think that that motivated me. You know, after my studies, I studied in communications and then took a hard left into the nonprofit sector in my early 20s. And it was really to serve these two communities that I felt very connected to, that I understood their reality. And I wanted to ensure that there was change for them to be able to reach their full potential in many, many different ways. And I became what we call in the business, a true community worker. I've done every job in the community sector you can think of, and eventually became the executive director of one of the oldest Black community organizations here in Quebec. And in that time, under my leadership, I was able to work on different socioeconomic strategies, one of them being entrepreneurship. which was clear and evident to me that this was a lever that could create economic opportunities and create a different dynamic for members of my community if they were given the right tools and access to really explore entrepreneurship. It wasn't a foreign concept in our community. It just wasn't nurtured. It wasn't put in the right context to be able to grow and to scale and to really make change for an individual, being the entrepreneur, their family, or their community. And that's what I wanted to contribute to. So under that time, as the executive director of that organization during the pandemic, which I think is important to mention because that was a very unsure time for all of us. And somehow a few of my colleagues said, you know what? No, let's go ahead and figure out how we're going to launch a new national organization and how we're going to work with the Canadian government. Just, you know, why not? You know, but I think it was, for me, in hindsight, a healthy distraction. Mm. Because there was so much uncertainty. I think my my defense mechanism was to anchor myself in what I know, and what I know is community development.
Smart.
So, okay, let's focus on that because everything else seems like it could go left or right. So I think I channeled the energy in a positive way, and that allowed for us, while looking at the Canadian government rolling out different programs to address COVID, we saw an opportunity with a program that was there to help entrepreneurs with access to capital to address a longstanding issue in terms of access to capital for Black entrepreneurs. And like I said, my co-founders and I, who were all across the country in our homes, you know, navigating WebEx, everything was new. We'd never done meetings like this before, but we were able to, you know, engage with our government, have a conversation that turned into co-design, which turned into the historic Black Entrepreneurship Program, which was an investment of $330 million by the Canadian government in Black entrepreneurship. And of that, $160 million was dedicated to the Black Entrepreneurship Loan Fund, which is a subset of that program in partnership with different institutions like the BDC, Alterna Savings, and VanCity. And the new organization that I had the, I think I'm going to say blessing to co-found with my co-founders, and I was named the inaugural CEO. So that's what I do in my day job. And the fun part about it is the other day I was speaking with a colleague and I realized that I'm going to coming up in May as well on 21 years exclusively working in the nonprofit sector. So half of my natural life, I've been doing this. And this is a great milestone to be at, to celebrate 21 years along with the third year anniversary of FACE. So May is going to be a good month.
Congratulations. And this means we're the same age, but congratulations on everything you've achieved.
Thank you.
And congratulations on, you know, FACE taking off the way it has. And, you know, needless to say, the government doesn't always get it right, but this seemed to have been a really smart move on their part and a sizable one at that. There's real capital being put behind the good intentions, going straight to entrepreneurs, which is really impressive. So let's talk about the last 3 years. Yeah. And is there something that strikes you, you know, when you first got FACE off the ground, this envelope of money was given to you to manage and invest with the entrepreneurial community? What were you seeing in terms of pressing needs? And obviously capital is always a pressing need if we had to sum it up. So, you know, you're answering part of the question, being able to allocate these funds. But beyond that, what struck you as kind of the, you know, the number one obstacle, or perhaps there's a few of them that entrepreneurs, especially entrepreneurs from the Black community across Canada, really needed access to?
Yeah. So I'm going to start off with what was quickly observed once we launched the program. The first thing, which is a positive thing, within an hour of opening the portal, which we designed with a Black-owned company here in Canada, portal that really does all of the intake, the entire processing of the actual loan documentation, and then we go through the process of working with our partners to fulfillment, we had over 3,000 accounts open in an hour.
Impressive. Wow.
So what we knew was the first learnings was that there were a lot of entrepreneurs or people who wanted to explore entrepreneurship who put their hand up and said, I want to be counted. I don't know what this program is, but y'all said it's for me and we want to be supported. We want to have access to capital. So they put their hand up. So from that learning, we were like, wow, a lot of people. And now we're at 33,000 accounts open on the platform. So that tells you that the first learning was the demand.
Out of these, was it mostly new entrepreneurs, somebody who maybe was turning to entrepreneurship for the first time, or did you have a mix of established entrepreneurs looking for funding as well?
So that was it. When the tidal wave hit and the intake process, once we were able to respond to the overwhelming call for support, and we looked at it, we had an actual mixed bag of experienced entrepreneurs who had been in business and had never had access to capital through traditional financial institutions, which was something to inquire and to explore. And then there were startups also. And the way that we built the actual program was to ensure that we opened up the aperture and criteria to allow that to occur. We wanted to be able to support startups. So we were able to finance them up to $50,000. We wanted to be able to give up to $250,000 because we understood that, especially during COVID, we have to remember the time period that we were standing in at that moment. What do these entrepreneurs need to be able to survive and then continue to thrive? So we realized right then that there was a tremendous amount of outpouring to face, and that was not just unique to startups who had never run a business and just had an idea and wanted to kind of project where they would go if they were given the capital, but existing businesses. And then I think we understood with that, we'll be able to really do a deep dive into the quantitative and qualitative assessment of what is the story of these entrepreneurs? Why were they unable to get access to capital through traditional channels? What are the barriers? What are the things that make it that they cannot achieve their desired outcome? Like you said, without access to capital, you're really going nowhere fast. And what we learned was there was a few barriers. The first thing is that the eligibility criteria, which is standard across any financial system or wherever you're dealing with borrowing, you have to have a business plan and financials. So you got to tell the story of your business. What is your business? Where does it position itself in the market? What is its unique value proposition? What is the revenue that you are currently making or what do you project to make? What does your profit look like? We need to understand the health of your business. This is where we take the pulse of your business to understand, can you fulfill a loan? If we give you this money, are you going to be able to pay it back? And we understood that a lot of entrepreneurs had never gone through the exercise of actually creating a business plan and going through the exercise of sitting down with like an accountant or a bookkeeper to be able to really create financials for themselves. And this meant we need to address this first. So, we understood really quickly that preparing or assisting entrepreneurs to be finance ready was going to be a part of the journey that we were going to have at FACE. And we took that challenge on willingly because a part of the BEP program, the second pillar was an ecosystem of Black service organizations that offer business development services. So we said, okay, let's start there. Within this program that the government has now supported, how do we connect and work with organizations across the country to be able to shift and move entrepreneurs to those organizations to then be able to circle back to be able to apply for financing. The other thing is that Canada has a very robust business ecosystem. There's a lot of service providers out there. There's a lot of resources. The thing that has occurred is that Black entrepreneurs fall outside of that ecosystem. They are not connected into that network. So they don't know the resources that are available to them. And then when you get into the actual ecosystem, it is overwhelming. There is, where do you go? How do you start? What's the best fit for me? So we said, how can we act as a bridge to make sure that we're able to make available what's available to entrepreneurs across this country? But more than that, bring in resources to talk about it. Going, you know, what I call cold calling to websites and different events. For any entrepreneur or anybody, it could be very intimidating because you feel like you're being dropped in the middle of the ocean. So we quickly started our masterclass series where we would bring in different resources. We brought in partners from the BDC, from Industry Canada, anybody who actually, as the entrepreneurs, were attracted to this new strategy that was called, you know, the Federation of African Canadian Economics, a lot of people came to the fold and said, hey, you know what, we offer services. How can we connect with your entrepreneurs to let them know what our offering is? So that was the vehicle. The masterclasses became critical, as well as our podcast, right? The Other Canada in TOC, it was about bringing the voices of community and entrepreneurship to give them, to amplify them, to say, this has been my story. This is where I've seen challenges. And with that insight, we hope to bring again to this bridge where we want to connect entrepreneurs with the ecosystem. We want to make sure that they're able to put their best foot forward when they submit their application for financing at FACE. And we found great ways to do that with other partners too. I don't know if you want me to jump right into that.
Well, let's talk about these partnerships because they're obviously key to delivering, you know, all this added value that that you've put together. So I'd love to know who they are and what kind of programs you've been able to develop with them.
And I think that it's I have to give an incredible shout out to my team at FACE, because when you are doing something that is historic and never been done, you have to really remain nimble. You have to remain flexible. You've got to be lucid, and you've got to be ready to adventure into what is coming at you. And I think that was what we've done in a really tremendous way. Maybe so a little bit pressure cooker style, but you know what? It's all good. You know, pressure makes diamonds. Well,
it's interesting because you're helping entrepreneurs on their path, but your own journey is very much entrepreneurial with the creation of FACE.
That's it. I tell people, I'm a social entrepreneur. Like I'm in this with you guys. Like I'm in it with you, and we have to respond. And I hope that what we've done at FACE will inspire entrepreneurs who are coming to FACE for support. See, listen, like we're in the trenches with you. We're making decisions every day. We're trying to pivot to our target market. We're trying to make sure that our offering is relevant and can compete as well in the market as well, and attract your attention and be able to track its effectiveness so that we can grow and scale as well. So we learned very quickly that if we were going to be a part of the investment readiness or finance readiness game, we had to identify partners who are aligned in this vision. And our first partnership out of the gate was with a TD, a Ready Commitment. And we went to them, you know, and I said, look, this is the data. I don't think we were a year old yet. This is the data. This is what we're seeing. This is the barrier. And we believe that if we embark together on investing in supporting entrepreneurs to becoming finance ready, we will be able to show that capital is not the only resource that is required for success. And TD, you know, bought in hook, line, and sinker. And together we're able to announce the Propelling Black Entrepreneurship program, which was really geared towards not giving access to capital, but more giving a subsidy to Black entrepreneurs to be able to get support from professional services. So this was our way of saying, hey, you want to start a business or you're in business, and we need to get you connected to an accountant so you can get your projections done, so you can get your financials done, so you can get those taxes up to date. So we wanted to remove the barrier of eligibility and allow the person to come forward and present their story. Business plans was a key element that we wanted to be able to contribute to. So through these subsidies, we're able to give entrepreneurs, you know, they put some skin in the game as well, because this is your journey. You've got to own it. Entrepreneurship is about putting up and taking risks. And we're here to support you in that. And we are now launching cohort 3. So we've done 2 cohorts of the Propelling Black Entrepreneurship Program. And it was just that, I think that is what you call like seamless and quick analysis and coming up with a solution. Like it was really like, here's the problem. This is what we need. Hey, partner, are you down? They were like, yep, let's do this. And it all came together, and we're going to be able to demonstrate the results of that. And knowing that we're helping entrepreneurs coast to coast to coast to be able to get that connection to a resource that they can keep, you know, for the rest of their journey. Like when you get a good accountant in your life, you know, you don't let that accountant go. That accountant has to retire, right?
Exactly.
And that's what we want. We want to build around the entrepreneur all of the supports that it needs to move confidently through the life cycle of its business.
No, and it's fascinating how, because this comes up in conversations on the show a lot with women entrepreneurs, where entrepreneurship, you know, it's been glamorized. It's this, you know, there's this cult of, you know, you dream up the business you want to start, and then, you know, snap your fingers and you'll become the successful entrepreneur. But very little is said about the factors that need to be in place, the even that network, I call them kind of the external trusted advisors that you need around you. And often it's, you know, business services, and it's not obvious, and it's not something that we're taught. It's not something that's talked about enough, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And these people are hard to find. And yes, if you're applying to a bank for any type of capital, if you're trying to raise funds, you need to have these tools in place to be able to just, you know, remove that barrier, as you said. Kudos to you for setting that up, and TD for joining. I know there's a few other partnerships that are kind of making all of this possible.
We saw that, you know, as I mentioned, we have like 33,000 accounts opened on our FACE platform, and there are different stages, right? I mean, that is, I mean, you know, I said, I remember when we first had our first meeting after launch with government, and I was like, well, we have our first win, guys. You know, like, people showed up. They said, yeah, like, we want this program.
So it works.
If there was ever a reassurance that there was a need for this program, you've got it. And that number continues to grow. That's the part, you know, I watched the trend of accounts opening, entrepreneurs moving to submission of submitting their application to us. You know, I'm watching these numbers. I'm going, wow, we've maintained momentum, which is very, very important for the growth of our project. But again, just trying to be lucid, trying to be pragmatic. What we also understood is that entrepreneurs need to generate revenue. They got to make sales, right?
That's true.
They're going to fulfill this
goal. It's not just having the business plan.
No, they've got to make sales. So for all the entrepreneurs that we have supported, and those who are in business, but maybe have not even applied for financing yet, maybe they don't need it yet, how do we make sure that they're visible? How do we make sure that people know that these businesses are scattered across our country in all different sectors? We've got to elevate them. We've got to raise them up. And we, you know, had that vision. And I think that, again, you call to you the partners that align with you. And we were just a few weeks ago, we announced our partnership with Interact, a multi-year partnership, to really look at that first piece, which is, we've got to let Canadians know that Black entrepreneurs are in the market. Because, you know, we often talk about the choices that we make in terms of the leadership of our country. And, you know, when we it's how important it is to go to the ballot box to vote. But we don't talk about how we could vote for equity.
We vote with our dollars.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Vote with your dollar. Like, you have the power to choose that I'm going to be equitable in how I use my resources. Yeah. If you want to make change, if you believe in change in this country, you can support entrepreneurs of color. You can support women. You could support entrepreneurs from the LGBTQ community. And better yet, you can support those who are intersectional. Cover all of those.
Exactly.
Right? And this is a way in which you can act every day as a Canadian who may believe that I can affect change in my country to make this landscape fair and better for everyone. So again, Interact was like, yeah, we love that. So we announced this partnership, and we wanted to make sure that we were able to elevate that. So we've now launched on our website. If you go to facecoalition.com, you can see, you know, list my business or look at the businesses, and you can now search by region and sector and really look at for different businesses across the country that are Black owned. And I think that that's an important peg in the sand, because I, in conversation, when, you know, people hear about the work that I do, they go, oh my God, this is great. How do we support? You know, and often people think it's like volunteering or, you know, writing a crazy check. No, please just buy from that local store.
Shop from these businesses.
Exactly. And if everybody does that consciously, we can definitely make, you know, incremental change that will snowball to become, you know, a fair market, just like that.
Are you ready to be inspired and connected? I'm really excited to share that we have officially launched the Brand is Female Conversation Series. Come and join us for a monthly conference that's changing the game in Montreal, Vancouver, and Toronto. Engage with fellow women thought leaders, innovators, and visionaries. Get ready for insightful discussions and powerful networking opportunities presented by TD Women in Enterprise. Visit our website, go to the events section, and secure your spot today. I can't wait to meet you in person.
You've just brought up women entrepreneurs, and obviously I have a vested interest in that segment of your clientele. Yeah. tell me a little bit about what you've observed. And also, I'm curious to know, out of these applicants over the past 3 years, is it 50-50? Are you seeing kind of a trend in terms of men versus women?
So our first year, we saw 33% of the funding that we did, or financing that we did, was to women-owned businesses, which is great, but I want more. But it's very much on par with Canada's actual lending or performance in terms of supporting entrepreneurs when you look at men versus women. But what I'm more excited about is the growth that we saw over a year, over year one to year two, which was an increase, right, of 12%, where more women were coming to the fold. And I am dedicated to making sure that we have specific conversations with women around what do they need to be able to take the step towards financing. Women assess risk differently than men. And we need to make sure that when we have the conversation around what is your next move as a business owner, and if you're a woman, it's to have them understand that, yes, risk is necessary, but there's a pathway to accessing capital. What are the grants that are available to you? What are the strategies that you can put in place so that you feel assured in the moment in which you decide to take on debt, or when you are then ready to raise and maybe go towards equity? But that conversation can be tailored so that women are taking in the considerations that they need to. I remember I met a woman out west, and she was, you know, a great, you could tell, entrepreneurial spirit high. She's affect everybody in the room knows her. Like, this is a made entrepreneur, born that way, clearly. But she was a mother, and she was a single mother. And the idea of debt for her, especially in the way it was structured in traditional finance, she said, I cannot guarantee a loan with my home. That is where my children live. And I will never forget that sentence, because I understood inherently at that moment, this woman was calculating way more than what her business needs were. She's calculating her entire life and all of her responsibilities. And she has to make sure that that risk on risk decision would be as minimal as possible, because she can't, she can't put it all in. That's not going to work for her. And
and many women are in that same situation.
Correct. And what we want to make sure is that we build spaces and conversations like the brand is female, where we can dive into those specific nuances and create spaces where other women can give strategies to other women who are in business, so that you don't have to guess. We've got avatars now. We've got examples. We've got winners. We've got women who have scaled. So now, as we always do in the sisterhood, it's time to share notes. And the more that we do that, I think that we'll see more women, and we'll see that number increase at FACE, because we are determined to work with many partners to kind of bring that information to women in a space where they can digest it. We had an opportunity to work with EDC and with Cohabitus this year, and put together a specific cohort for Black business, Black women in business, around what does it look like to export. And the reason why I love that project that we did this year is because, again, it's just creating the space where women are, one, energized by other women, inspired by other women, can ask questions that they need to about businesses that they are running, but beyond that. And I think if we replicate that model, and we see a lot of organizations across the country that are creating these women-driven spaces, we're going to see, we're going to be able to, I think, chart the success of women through their journey of accessing capital.
Well, and I'm excited for that conversation. Shameless plug for the event we're having, where you'll be joining the CEO of Ange Québec to talk about women's capital needs and how women can access capital. But as you've brought up, and as you've brought up throughout the conversation, it's not just about getting access to the money. It's the tools women need in order to do that efficiently, and then, you know, plan strategies around what their business needs are. You and I have had previous conversations around that too, but financial literacy, I mean, that's come up in conversations on the show quite a bit, and you know, bankers bringing up too, women don't always have the same tools or education around around finances, around banking. So when they have those first conversations about capital raising, you know, risk or just understanding what tools are available when it comes to finance, often they're at a disadvantage compared to men. Mm-hmm. Is that something you're seeing, you know, within cohorts? And is it something you're hoping to tackle too? I know it's a topic you cover in the master series, among others.
I think it's so important because from the perspective of, yes, there, and I like to call it, you know, I wish financial literacy, which is it's a big, an important umbrella, you know, I
there's a lot in there.
And that could be the Virgo in me. I love subsets, right? There's for entrepreneurs, we're talking about being, you know, finance literacy. If I can send every entrepreneur towards my entrepreneurship relationship managers or to any bank and they could speak banker.
Yeah.
I know that I'd be giving them a huge service, right? A massive advantage to be able to use the language to describe and to exchange around the business that they have and the business they want to do with that banker. Mm-hmm. And what we have is a disconnect in lexicon and understanding. You might talk to an entrepreneur and they call the work that they're doing, for example, their sales, something else.
Yeah.
Well, they describe it that way. But when you speak to a banker calls it one thing, sales. That's it. It's really not. It's very static. It's very staunch.
Yeah.
And we need to be able to allow our entrepreneurs to associate what they do and what it is. And that's how I would say you would learn to speak the language of being a banker. Finance language. Finance is a language. And we want to be able to make people trilingual, you know, as much as we can in this country. But the other part, and coming back now to the broader financial literacy piece, is also how you manage yourself in anticipation of wanting to start a business.
Exactly.
And this your personal finances and the way in which you manage that is critical at the beginning of your startup journey, because there is no financial or credit history on the business. It's you. So it's going to be very important for you to demonstrate your credit capacity, your ability to manage your finances, because that speaks to the character of the person who owns the business. And this is how we like to break down these elements. And we are working now to identify on our roadmap, how can we create a program in collaboration with, because that's, I believe in that. I believe in collaboration. We've got to figure out a way to be able to bring financial literacy tangibly. And from the perspective of a business owner, what do I need to know about myself being an entrepreneur? And then how do I make sure that my business is also aligned? And then I can walk into any financial institution very confidently and be able to, you know, talk banker, right? Like we need to to brand that. We need to name it something and call it that. Because I feel like this will be a game changer for our entrepreneurs. And around the literacy piece too, it's like, I always say, if entrepreneurs understood their ratios before they applied for financing, they would know if they should be going towards debt at this point.
100%.
They would know whether it's the time to go look for it. They would know if investors are the right, they would know themselves. So if we're talking about empowerment, that's what empowerment looks like. It's the ability to self-assess and understand where you are so you can make decisions or changes to arrive to where you want to be. I would love to see that for all entrepreneurs across this country and how we're going to reach the different identities within that so that they get the information and can use it.
Yeah, well, I join you in that wish. And I think it's interesting how you bring up that notion of speaking banker. And it brings to mind a conversation I had with a woman entrepreneur who highly successful business. If I was to name it, you know, you'd know who she is. Mm-hmm. And she had this disconnect with her bank. And she's been doing this for years. And, you know, they have a track record of financial success. Mm-hmm. But there was just one item on her balance sheet that they chose to kind of disclose in a different way. Mm-hmm. And then that's what caused, and the banker wasn't, you know, he didn't pick up on it. Mm-hmm. So it was throwing off the ratios. It was throwing, and, you know, just that mistake, which for her wasn't even a mistake. It was just, you know, a different way, not following the typical standard, put a halt to her, you know, request for financing. Mm-hmm. And I have this conversation with my own accountant. Like, I don't speak accountant, and I need, even after a few years, I need my service providers. And I know this is the case for women entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. We also need the other party to kind of acknowledge that we're not all coming at this with an MBA and, you know, financial management.
That's it.
And I think bankers are increasingly recognizing that, or at least, you know, banks are working towards educating their bankers to be able to work with entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs, and they are a partner of this show. But I know this is something that the women in enterprise segment at TD is working towards, and they've made progress. But it needs to happen on both sides. And as you're saying, I think that piece is so important for women specifically. And are you seeing out of the women, you know, part of your program, is it a diversity of sectors? Are you seeing specific sectors maybe kind of overrepresented? And I'm curious to know sizes of the business as well. What trends are you noticing?
Right. So on our side, what I can say is generally our portfolio is micro and nano sized businesses. So these are 1 to 2 employees, and they are really small businesses, but that's okay, because those are the businesses that when they are nurtured, guided, supported, and invested in, they become our small and medium sized businesses, and hopefully also scaled to be large sized businesses here in Canada. We know the lifeblood of Canada is its small and medium sized businesses. So that's great. That's fine. What we also see is that there's no concentration in our portfolio. So we have different sectors that are covered in our portfolio, which is a good thing. The top three sectors that we finance so far are in professional services, retail, and also in food and accommodations. Mm-hmm. But I think, and that doesn't vary very much in terms of men or women ownership either. So this tells me that one, good on us to be able to now understand who is Black Business Canada. And that allows for us to also start to think ahead of what these businesses and the sectors that they're in would need, should they need to scale. So again, do we need to look at Export Canada? Who do we need to bring into the fold to prepare the way? An entrepreneur is on their journey and they're, you know, they're head down most of the time. If they can look up and we've kind of prepared some options for them to just facilitate that journey, I think we would be doing exactly what we're mandated to do. Supporting entrepreneurs in terms of access to capital could never just be it. It has to be. I always talk about the four pillars, and I wrote an article recently in Forbes about it. It was really about how do we create access to best practices? How do we create access to the proper information that we need? How do we create access to mentorship and sponsorship? And then the last thing is capital. So I can't be in the finance game and not invest or support or be in line with those who are dealing with the other three pillars, because that's what builds a strong, resilient entrepreneur who is likely to see success if they put in the commitment and they also stay open to receiving the support.
Absolutely. Something we've talked about in the past as well is And this kind of overlaps with what I just asked you about how women, you know, can acquire skills around financial literacy or really any type of skills. You've brought up the support and the different programs that you've put in place to supplement skills that may not already be there. Women network differently than men, and we know how much networking is relevant and crucial and critical when it comes to growing our business, finding new clients, business development, you know, establishing partnerships, finding those advisors that we rely on. What have you observed with, you know, members of your programs? Mm-hmm. And are you seeing a shift in that behavior that women have? I think because we've you know, we know there's certain obstacles that are specific to women. We've talked about financial literacy. We've talked about women's very, very specific needs around being often responsible for additional family duties, which, you know, can impair. I think it can add to our experience and our skills and make us very fierce business ladies, yeah. But we know there's barriers in place. And then the way we network, the time we can allot to going out and making those cold calls, you know, can be an issue. Curious to hear what you've observed and if you're seeing any kind of shifts around these trends.
Yeah. So we talked about the fact that, hey, you know, if deals only get made at golf courses, you might not catch a whole bunch of us there.
Not me anyway.
But that's it. Sanka sets on Thursdays. Sorry, I'm doing homework. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's one of those things where we, I think it's imperative for us to create the spaces that work for us. So when I'm asked by organizations like as far out as, you know, Vancouver to say, you know, we're going to do a virtual event, then we're going to break off into breakout rooms and we're going to have conversations and we're going to follow up in these ways. I said, bet, when are you guys doing it? On a Sunday afternoon. And I was like, I know why that's happening and I'm okay with that. Right? I'm good with that. And we have to make the time. Business, yeah. Yes, there are business hours. And that's really even subjective. Now that the world has gone digital, there is no time to do business. Business happens, it transacts all the time.
Yeah.
It always
that has changed.
Sure, it always has. But now it's just that more of us can be involved in this kind of circular idea again.
And we have the tools to do it efficiently.
We have the tools to do it efficiently. So we're not advocating for throwing work-life balance out the window and burnouts. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about technology has given us the ability to be more flexible and dynamic in the way in which we create these opportunities to share, engage, network, and create relationships. I think that just naturally, I've always been somebody who's like, man, give me as much tools as I can. I can stack what I need to get done. I've always been a busy person. I don't think that that's going to change. I'm a mother of three, so that is not going to change anytime soon. But technology for me, particularly in this project, we started facing a pandemic. I'm a community worker my whole life. We work in offices. People come to the community center. Yeah. This is where we build relationship. We talk, you know, we there's always food, you know, like this is just how we do it. That was no mass. We were not able to do that at that time. Technology was a saving grace. Technology was the digital bridge and environment and community that we had to build very quickly in order to connect with our audience and connect with the people who needed to connect with us. So, and I've never left or abandoned it because now I'm a staunch champion of exploring technology to its fullest capacity. Technology is a tool to assist us, you know, and there's a lot of like, you know, is technology taking? No, technology is not taking anything.
Yeah.
Technology is there to assist us so that we are able to optimize and get things done in an efficient way and not lose ourselves, which is the things that are most important to us personally and individually. So creating a digital community for me, I really encourage that. Because again, it allows people to jump in and out of the ring. We don't have to live, you know, under FOMO. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to fear missing out. We can create spaces where people can jump in, catch up, you know, and come back out and come back to the fold when required. Yeah. We just have to hold space for them to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And I love what you said about creating spaces that work for us.
Yeah.
So technology allows us to do that. What is the most, you know, impactful and efficient way for us to communicate, to have access to that network of trusted advisors? And now those platforms are created and they can, they work for women and many are created by women, including your own platforms. I could keep talking to you for hours, but we will have a longer conversation at our in-person event. In closing, and I always end these conversations by asking my guests to share two or three pieces of advice they'd like to impart on fellow women entrepreneurs. Curious to know what yours are today and, you know, based on everything you've seen in the ecosystem over the past few years at FACE, but also with everything that is happening in the entrepreneurial space these days. So what would be two or maybe three pieces of advice you'd like to share today?
So it's so interesting because I'm like, what did I say last time I was on the show? And I wonder if it changed, right? I'm curious to see. I'm going to answer.
I didn't go back and listen.
Right. So I guess we'll find out. Like, it's changed or if it's the same. I know myself quite well. And I think that there are just a few consistent threads that have shown back up in my career and becoming a social entrepreneur and now in this journey that I'm in with as the leadership of FACE. And again, you have to be bold. You have to be committed to the idea that whatever is going on between your two ears and that feeling that you have that says, this is the direction I'm supposed to go, you have to be bold enough to do that. One of my friends said something to me a few years ago, and it made complete sense, and I use it all the time. Everything good in life is on the other side of fear.
Yep.
And sometimes we fear things that are not worth being scared of. It's just the fear of the unknown. It is the fear of being uncomfortable. It's the fear of being like, do I have all the answers? No, you don't. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. So I think being bold and saying that I'm going to embark on this journey with presenting my best self every day. Mm-hmm. And that can vary as well. And to be kind to yourself, to know that the first thing that you need to acknowledge is that you were bold enough to take the first step, and then the second and the third. And then you get to look back and go, look how far I've come. So I would say there's that. The second thing again is there's a strength in the sisterhood. You know, I have many mentors, you know, from all different sectors, men, women, but I'll tell you, when it starts to crank, it gets tight and it starts to feel like, ooh, I need somebody to give me some words of wisdom or some guidance or just be a sounding board so that I can find my own answer. They're critical women who, you know, it's like bat phone, right? Like the phone rings in the corner, send the signal up, and they're like, okay, what are we dealing with, right? Mm-hmm. And so I would say it's very important to build a network, but within that network, make sure that you include people that you feel as though they reflect or can understand by shared lived experience your journey. Because they will give you insight that may be different or a little bit more fulsome or multidimensional to another mentor. And not to say that those aren't valuable, but it's just, listen, women just, we just touch more. We just understand more. We go through more. So when you have all of those things be a part of your, I'd say, life portfolio, it is just richer and you can learn so much. The last thing I would say is you have to be curious. Mm-hmm. And be willing to understand that the way you think that it is quite frankly and quite seriously going to change. This is an ever-evolving.
You have to be open to it, right?
You got to be open. If you resist the changes, then you are not growing. If you think about anything related to growth, very few things at its inception looks like it does at its finish. That means there's different stages. So you have to be ready to accept the changes and be curious about what you're going to learn in those changes of the different stages of your business, the milestones, the pivots. So I love, you know, a good old scope change will teach you a lot in running a business, but it can also unearth an opportunity. So that's why I say never be married to the vision that you have right now of what your business is going to look like, because you don't know what's unfolding. There are variables that you don't control, but if you stay open, you might be able to take advantage of or capitalize on those changes. But you've got to stay nimble. You've got to stay open. No rigidity. Put your shoulders down. Just stay open and curious, because curiosity can often lead you down paths that you didn't think that you would get to explore. Doesn't always kill the cats. I hate that whole thing, curiosity.
I was just going to say that. That's what came to mind.
Like, cats, and it definitely don't kill us. So
just outdated. Exactly.
So that's what I would say. Be bold.
Yeah.
There's a power in the sisterhood, and make sure that network is full of women who can reflect to you their own experience that you can learn from. And lastly, stay curious and be open to change.
I mean, such amazing wisdom. And now I will go back and listen to see what you had shared the first time.
We'll see if I've grown in my perspective before. But I think those are consistent. Those are builder blocks.
Yeah.
And no matter what,
exactly.
I know they're anchors for me. I hold on to those things. And, you know, that keeps me moving day to day.
Thank you so much, Tiffany. It's always such a joy speaking to you. Congratulations on getting to 3 years of FACE and getting to 21 years of
of your own work in the space as a social entrepreneur. And I'm very excited for our in-person conversation. We will link all of that in the show notes for this episode. And I can't wait to see what Faze does next and what new partners you bring to the table. So we'll do a follow-up on all of it. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. I love it. The Brand is Female.
Thank you so much for listening to the Brand is Female podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of The Brand is Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more.